In this episode, we're talking about the future of search. We're talking about how topical authority actually impacts your brand, how you can do this, and how you can test topical authority. I think this is something I've never heard before anywhere being talked about. So that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. And obviously, we're going to talk about AI search as well, how that's developing, how the future might look like, and how agents are interacting. So this is our topic today for the SMX special with Jess Scholz, and I can't wait for it to start and for you guys to listen. So let's go.
Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Hier hörst du Insights zu Digital Marketing Strategien und Technologien. Viel Spaß bei dieser Folge.
Yes, so I'm really lucky to have with me here Jess Scholz. She used to live in Germany a lot, but now she's back in Australia. And she's one of the few people talking all around the world from Australia and really sharing knowledge with everyone. So she's really like, if you're interested in the future of search, Jess is the one you have to listen to. And that's why I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today, Jess. And you're speaking not only at SMX Advance next, you're also speaking at SE Oktoberfest, which is super exclusive. And I think you're talking, I saw on your agenda, like another show in Barcelona, and then you're talking like all over Europe, and then you're also already talking at SMX Munich in March 2026. So this is an amazing speaker lineup. But tell us a bit about yourself and what you're excited to speak about.
So I'm an independent SEO consultant. I mainly specialize in what I call future of search. So wherever it's like AI search or agentic search or the whatever it might be, I'm looking at what's coming, but not overreacting, figuring out how to be mindful of what's coming while still taking care of the present.
Okay. That's actually really good advice, because I think half of the industry is freaking out and saying like it's all over, and the other half is like, okay, let's get this. This is like everything's new. SEO is also dead, but now it's only AI search left over. Yeah. So this is like the two halves I've been meeting. So how do you handle that also in the conversation with clients? That would be interesting for me, because I'm pretty sure a lot of clients are coming towards you now asking like, what should we do now? Is everything AI? And then the others are like, hey, we've done SEO for 10 years. Did we waste all our money?
I think what I find really reassuring is always going back to the data, to be able to look at it and say, yes, you know, a platform like ChatGPT is going to be important, or something like AI overviews might be starting to impact your metrics now. But if it's having a dramatic impact on your metrics now, it's likely because you've got something wrong in your foundation. And it's not actually the AI, it was going to come out one way or the other. It's the symptom, not the cause. While if you're really looking in at that data, you'll see that for SEOs who have been around a little bit longer, you'll remember a few years ago, everything was TikTok SEO, and TikTok and video was going to be taking over. And then before that, it was, you know, mobile. You're never going to have anything on desktop again. And there was a little bit of YouTube in there, and there was Facebook in there at one point. And it's always something that's the hype. We always have to be celebritizing something. So AI is just our most recent celebrity. It's the Kim Kardashian of the SEO world. It will go away and something else will replace it in a few years' time. It's not that none of these channels are important. They all are. They're all contributing new ways of thinking about it. They're contributing a new surface you can optimize for. It's not that you can ignore it, but you don't have to go full in on whatever the fad of the year is. Mm-hmm. You can take a step back and say, okay, I can see how this new puzzle piece fits into my bigger scheme. And that bigger scheme is not the scheme of SEO. That's the bigger scheme of marketing and branding. And that gives a lot of confidence to, while it might be absolutely blowing up in the SEO world, not so much when you really look down into the details of the KPIs. Yeah.
Yeah. As you're mentioning KPIs, I really liked how Rand Fishkin showed some numbers. I think it was back in March this year, where he showed like the impact of real traffic coming from ChatGPT, Gemini, and other AI search engines was incredibly low. Do you still see that, or has that changed?
I don't see that changed right now, particularly for ChatGPT as a service. Granted, the conversions from there are much higher, so the intent is strong there. And I think with agent mode coming in granted, it's a baby right now, but as that grows and develops into next year and throughout next year, I think we're going to see a lot more value coming from ChatGPT as a platform. But putting it in the context of the wider numbers, you know, LinkedIn is bigger, Twitter is bigger, Facebook is bigger, Instagram is bigger, TikTok is bigger. So it's bigger than Bing, but that's not exactly a hard bar to pass. So put it in context of everything else. And I do believe that AI is critical for the future of search. It's not something that we can just ignore or not have new tactics for or not be prepared for. But the pace of change moves at the pace of humanity, and the pace of humanity is not particularly fast on the whole.
Oh, yeah. This depends on the target group of or the audience you're targeting, obviously. But yeah, if you're targeting, like, I would say, a more slower demographic or slower audience, then the change will take much, much longer, as they're still not using the internet, some of them, or only partly using the internet. And some of them obviously will adapt super fast. And I think that that's also something that I really like looking at this, is always understand what your audience is using. Like, if your audience is only on TikTok, you should be on TikTok, right? Then AI doesn't even matter that much, because it's so funny. The TikTok audience, who are also searching on TikTok, and there's like this 10-year window of audience that actually uses TikTok as search. They're also not on ChatGPT using it as search. They're using still TikTok as search. Same as the people using Google are still using Google as search. And I think AI Overviews has definitely halted the shift of people moving away from Google to ChatGPT to search, and kept people on Google, I'm pretty sure, because the answers are so fast, and ChatGPT still does take some time, and it's a bit annoying if you just need a quick info.
I think it does come to those generational divides to some extent, but it's more of a time passing. I always reference back to when I was a kid in Australia, we have something called the Yellow Pages. They have it in the UK as well. I don't know if it was a thing in Germany.
But yeah, it's called Gelbe Seiten. Yeah, exactly the same. It's called Yellow Pages, just translated to German.
Exactly. So you had these tomes of books. And I remember when I was a little kid and, you know, your parents had to call a plumber, you had to run and get the big, heavy book and look up where's the plumber. And then obviously Google came in, but it didn't murder it from day one. It's not like, okay, Google's here, there's no more Yellow Pages. It took 19 years from when Google was released until the last of the Yellow Pages was published in Australia. That's a long time span. It's not that, okay, ChatGPT or generative AI is here, and now Google is dead and traditional search is dead. Like, give it 15 years, and then maybe we can have this conversation. But by that time, everything would have evolved into what's coming next, including you and your brand and your website, if you weren't a complete moron and did a Kodak moment. So, yes, it's important, but I think everybody needs to just chill out a little bit and realize that you have time to strategize this properly. You do not need to have all of the answers next month. You just need to know, okay, this is how this is going to fit into my longer term roadmaps.
Yeah, I love that. And maybe just to explain for the audience what the Kodak moment was, this was when Kodak decided not to go digital, as the Kodak is the very famous, or used to be the very famous, camera producing company and film producing company, and they decided not to go digital, although they were actually one of the first to develop a digital camera back in the day. But they decided not to go forward with this, keep on doing analog, and then time caught up with them really fast and they went out of business. That's one of the biggest photo companies in the world went out of business because they didn't move on with what was happening in the world. They said, no, this is never going to catch on. And it did crazily. So yeah, that's just important to understand that. And you're talking about branding. And I think branding is like really important in this case, because branding creates the brand around you, which is then picked up by the search engines, which is picked up by AI. And then you're being recommended for the specific thing you're known for, or at least the machines think you're known for. And maybe let's talk about some tactics, how we can obviously do branding, but do branding more from an, I would say, like, tactical SEO standpoint. And one of those tactics, which isn't that popular in Germany, I'd say, but is discussed all around the world, is topical authority. And you're an expert on that as well. So I'd just love to hear your take on topical authority, how important it is, how does it work, and what does EEAT actually mean?
I think a lot of it is acronyms that we've made up as SEOs to make ourselves feel very important and smart. At the end of the day, topical authority is just, it's your share of voice. If there is a conversation happening, are you part of that conversation? And do people actually want to listen to you when you speak as part of that conversation? Or are you that annoying tech bro that everyone rolls their eyes the second that he opens his mouth because he just says what everybody else just says, but mansplaining it back even worse? And I think this is where people get really confused. They think topical authority means producing the same content that everybody has already produced, but doing it on your website.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. It's not that you don't have to have a wide breadth. It's not that you don't have to cover off all of the different digital touch points that are important in a user journey, but you have to do it in a way that is about you and your brand and that adds something to the conversation rather than just regurgitates the content that already exists. Because if I want something to regurgitate content that exists, I'm going to AI mode or I'm going to ChatGPT because it regurgitates it better than you do. You need to be actually adding more value to the conversation. And so that comes down to true expertise, like having something interesting and new and potentially fresh, even that's just a fresh take, but something to say.
That's very interesting because adding to the conversation has gotten actually really hard because I think most people feel like everything has been said, and especially for our clients who are like experts in certain industries and they also exchange with other experts in the industry, they always have the feeling that everything has been said, that they know a lot, but their friends know a lot and their partners know a lot. So they don't feel that they can add anything to the conversation. And on the other hand, you have the SEOs that just say, okay, we have found 350 topics that you need to talk about. We are going to create 350 pages for your topical authority, and we're going to do a really good about you page. And that's our topical authority approach. And I think there has to be something in between there, which is the correct answer.
Yeah, it's not following a strategy like it's dogma. It's understanding the intent. As SEOs, we should be good at identifying intent behind strategies, intent behind words, and understanding, well, how does that fit into the larger brand that I am? You know, if you are running a big real estate portal, every single year you can do real estate insights, or you can do the same in jobs, you can do the same in automotive, you can do the same in many industries. So there's these kind of repeatable tactics where it's still fresh because it's that year or that quarter or that whatever it is, but it's still dependable because it's a strategy that you've done before, you can execute on well, you can learn what works and what doesn't, like period over period. Then there's going to be other industries where you can keep things fresh by keeping up with what's happening within the news cycle. So say you're an accountant. There are so many guides on how to use QuickBooks. We don't need another guide on how to use QuickBooks from you, dear accountant. You could talk about how you're leveraging AI, topic of the month, of the year, of this decade. How are you doing that to make your agency more efficient or do your reconciliation processes or find something new and interesting? And I think as SEOs, we get too caught up in thinking that everything has to be text. That topical authority means long form blog content.
Yeah.
And it's obvious that when you go onto a platform like TikTok, not that I'm particularly on there all the time, but if you go on there, there are these influencers, for want of a better word, that's not just fashion and makeup. There are finance influencers, there's real estate influencers, there's all of these niches where they're finding something interesting to talk about with no thought of keywords and no thought of topical authority and every thought of engaging their audience. And so they come up with actually genuinely interesting content. And there is a difference between what works on social and what will work on search. And I think it's healthy to realize that as SEOs, there is something in the middle of those two. It's called Google Discover. And if you're a brand and you think you have topical authority, there is one really, really good way to test that. Publish an article that you think will get picked up by Google Discover. And if it does, congratulations, you have found the holy grail of traffic sources that will probably outpace your search evergreen content strategy within a couple of weeks. And if you don't get that Discover traffic, then you don't have topical authority in the eyes of Google, and it's just that simple.
Interesting. Because Discover, I mean, basically made for news publishers, mostly, I guess, but obviously everybody can be a news publisher. But getting into Discover, I felt, was also quite hard for some bigger publishers. I'm not sure if it was possible to publish if you're below a certain threshold even, but I'm not sure.
That's Google News. I will give you. News plays by very different rules.
Okay.
But no, Discover is in theory open to everyone. Mm-hmm. In practice, in my experience, open to anyone who has in that topic topical authority. So even when I'm working with media clients, for example, you can have, 50 different categories on a Reach Media publication. Probably only 10 or 20 of them that brand will be able to get into Discover, despite the fact that they are large publishers, because the reality is you can't be an expert on everything. You can't show enough to have topical expertise on everything. And it's not brand alone. And it's not author alone. It's a combination of the content and the author and the brand that all has to come together, as we've always talked about with EEAT and the levels of EEAT.
But I love the way how to test that, because I don't think that there's any other test out there for EEAT or topical authority to test that. But if I was to publish an article, maybe even with Search Engine Land, and push that into Discover, that could work. Or if I publish it on my own blog, that would be definitely a very strong signal if I don't get into Discover that I'm not topical enough on that. But if I niche down on something where I'm very specifically been talking about for many years, then I might get into Discover. I won't get much traffic, obviously, because Discover doesn't have that amount of traffic for these niche topics. Mm-hmm. But getting in would definitely be an indicator, yes. That's really cool. I like that.
And but what still, I like to do.
Yeah.
And have what you, I like.
Yeah, explain. Yeah. I'm already excited.
What I like to do with a brand, like if it's not a publisher brand, and so you've been publishing on your blog, right? And you're trying to understand, does my editorial team that writes for the blog, or does the experts that I hire to write for the blog, can they write for Discover? Do they understand the difference between an evergreen piece, a seasonal piece, a time-limited general piece, and a time-limited piece that's for Discover? Because there is different ways that you need to phrase the title and different ways that you need to present the image and different, like there are Discover-specific strategies. So if you've published a few and you're not getting into Discover and you think you're publishing good Discover-type content, there's what you can do is you can take that article, modify it ever so slightly, take it to a publisher who you know gets regular coverage in your niche, and you pay whatever you have to do, right? You get that article published through them on their platform and have them report back, did it get impressions and clicks in Discover? And if so, then you know it's your domain that doesn't have the topical authority. And if not, you know that your editorial team can't write for Discover and they need to keep practicing.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes absolute sense. Yeah, I guess that is really also super important. It's like if I would publish on Search Engine Land obviously being very well known for SEO, and I'm pretty sure it has the topical authority. And then my name might already have the topical authority, but the content might not. So that's also very important to see there. I mean, it was interesting. I was talking to someone who I've brought up this example many times, but he used to work for a beauty magazine, and he was a guy writing for men's skin cream, and they would rank really high for that. And then he switched to a business magazine, and he wrote articles, normal articles for business, and they ranked well. It was fine. But then he published one article with his name for skin cream on the business magazine, and they ranked number one straight up. And it must have been, obviously it was still a very strong magazine, but his name had the topic authority because him having 10 years of experience in skin creams on the other magazine was just something that Google understood. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, it's your digital footprint, right? It comes with you. And that makes, from Google's perspective, that really is algorithmically helpful, because if you have people who are jumping from A to B to C to D and writing everything about everything, they don't have authority, and that is simply the reality. I'm not going to go and talk to some girl who has a different interest every single year about my finance and stock options. Like, you want to have someone you actually trust, and trust is built by focusing on an industry and continuously publishing something new, exciting, dependable, opinionated, over and over again.
Then you would also say that to get topic authority, you do have to at least write about your topic more and more. Maybe not all, about all the topics that are in this space, but around your topic, you should be, you know, talking about the different things that are available so that you can build up this topical authority, right?
Well, the same way that a brand needs a clear category focus, and that the brand shouldn't go outside of the category focus without having serious level of funding and buy-in, because it's going to be a 3 to 5 year turnaround to mm-hmm. take over a new industry. It's when we put things in context of something that's normal in branding and marketing, and say it'll take 3 years to establish yourself in a new industry, a new category, like, of course that makes sense. And that's going to require a lot of resources, money, and strategy. And then SEOs turn around and they're like, oh yeah, well, we've been publishing on this, but now we're just going to start publishing on that and it'll be fine. No, it's not going to be fine, because it's a new category entry point and you have no history. You're no one. So why should anybody listen to you versus those who have been in the space for a long time? It's, as long as it reflects your brand strategy, you already have some authority. You just need to speak louder and clearer in the conversations.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Interesting to cut through the noise, even through the noise that the machines have, because they also have so much noise, right? So there's so much content being now created with AI. What do you think about content being created by AI? What do you think about that?
I think that anything is made by AI is by definition commodity content, because it can only produce what already exists. So mm-hmm. content produced by AI for me has little brand value, because you're not contributing any expertise to the conversation. So it's not that it's bad for SEO. That's the wrong question.
Yeah.
The question is, how is this adding value to your users? If you're not doing that, having winning the citation, getting the click, that doesn't matter if that human lands on that page and that human leaves disappointed. If that human leaves disappointed, you've hurt the brand by winning the click. How is that an SEO win when you hurt your target audience? Yeah. Any single time you win the click, you need to see that that's the start of that journey. It's not the end goal. Our end goal's never been clicks. Our end goal has been brand salience, and through brand salience, driving conversions, repeat loyalty. And so if you earn that click and that person's really disappointed because it's just AI slop, how are you helping your brand? How are you helping our industry? How are you helping the good of the internet? Do better.
So true. Maybe something interesting I'd love to run by you. What do you think about this? So I think Google is already always trying to find the right result for the user. But I think that ChatGPT and Gemini especially are trying to match what the person is looking for with the right result, which is also really interesting. So they're trying to give you an answer. And I mean, Google has been trying that, but they've given you 10 answers, which one you had to choose from the best one yourself. And now it's really interesting. I think I see the AI search engines being like crazy matching machines that try to figure out what you want and try to match you with the right company. That's why they give you way less results and very good recommendations. But I think that's something that, yeah, that we always have to think about. The matching, so what we put on our website, this is what the AI machine can read, and this is what it understands. And then with the citations from externally where we're being referenced from, this is the picture, the brand we're giving the machine, and this is how they will match us or try to match us with the correct person. So that's what I also said to clients is getting less traffic, but getting better traffic is a win, right? Because it's like the same with phone calls. If you're in the service business, like you're a consultant as well, you don't want to have 100 calls a day with people who are not interested. You want to have one call with one person that buys. Mm. And I think it's the same for most businesses, except for maybe a few who can really leverage that scale. But this is something which I always see. That's why I see the new AI search engines more like matching engines. And that's why it's so important that we have to really define who we are as a brand and put that on the website so that the machine can understand and match us with the person that's looking for. That's like very similar with cars. It's very easy to explain. And then I'd like to hear your opinion on it if I'm right or wrong. Please correct me if I'm wrong as well. You have Volkswagen, which is obviously more catered to, I would say, mid to starting entry point in cars. And then you have like, people are probably going to kill me for saying this, but then you have like Audi, which is more like in the middle. And then you have Mercedes, which is maybe more at the top, and then Porsche at high end. So, and if I enter this as a query and I say, I want to have a reasonably priced car, which still has a good reliability and maybe a little status and whatever, and then they recommend me Audi maybe. Yeah, then this is probably correct, right? This is not wrong. This is a nice matching. And before that, if you type in car, reasonable price in Google, it just gives you like random just 10 answers and, you know, from all the different car manufacturers, but there was no answer. And now it's a matching. So if Volkswagen puts on the page, we produce cars for the, you know, for beginners, and Audi puts in, we have middle-class cars, and Mercedes says we have luxury cars, then this can be matched really perfectly on the prompt. And I think then the right audience finds the right product. But I'm, you know, could be wrong.
I don't think you're wrong. I think you're very right. It's looking at not only here is the entity, in this case a brand, it's looking at the attributes of that entity or that brand or that product or whatever it might be. And then it's not only matching to your prompt, it's then obviously matching, if you were talking about ChatGPT, to the memory and the yes. understanding that it has of you, all of those implicit signals that it has as well, which are very strong. And I think people underestimate how important that is already, and that's going to continue to be in the future, and how much that will lock us in to a certain chatbot, because we've invested in it understanding us, so it gives significantly better responses, which is definitely a challenge for Google with Gemini as a standalone app. So it'll be interesting to see how they address that with, they have a lot of data on us, but it's not in Gemini chatbot.
Exactly.
So AI mode is going to be very interesting to see how they leverage the assets that they have without scaring their audience. But it does come back to, yeah, you're part of a specific market, and how do you have that best match, as you were rightly saying, which makes the cognitive load of AI search much lower than that of traditional search. And this is why slowly over time, it's not going to be, you know, AI mode launches and everything changes, as we've already seen in the States. It's going to be this slow, gradual, trained, to an extent, generational progression from one surface to another surface. But it doesn't change SEO. It doesn't change the fact that you need to know who you are as a brand. You need to know who you're trying to attract. You need to understand that you can't be luxury and budget at the same time.
Yes.
And so you have to have those attributes very clearly communicated, not only on your own about page, but your socials, and have that resonate through Reddit or come through reviews or forums or articles or whatever it might be. Like this wider ecosystem, your brand is so much more than your website or your app. And I think as SEOs, we're so focused on optimizing the website, optimizing specific URLs, we forget that a website is not the product of any business. The product of a business is what it sells, is brand value. So unless you're selling websites, your website is not your product.
Yeah, so true. No, I think that is also one of the most important approaches that we can do in SEO right now, is not just to focus on the keywords and the search volume and the 600 words text. Oh, you know, this is what I still get asked, like, how long does the text have to be? But really focusing on communicating well, and then obviously getting the search volume, but also answering the intent. So the one thing I really loved was I read this article on something on how to create amazing, valuable text. And it was like, it was nearly opposite of what SEO was. So what they did is they answered the question right at the beginning. There was like, it was not complicated, but it was like the TLDR was right at the beginning. But it was like I'll break it down with a short example. Like, how do you boil an egg? And then it was like, or how long do you boil a soft egg or something like that? And then the answer was like 3 minutes. And then it said, like, below that, it was like the whole instruction how to do it. But if you just need the answer, you were done. And they tested this, if Google would punish this for being too short. And it did not, because the people found their answer. And I think this is something that is more important. As SEOs, at least 10 years ago, we tried to really make a small topic really big just to have the relevance. This now I don't think is needed anymore at all. But obviously, if you go into depth, really into depth with real knowledge, these articles rank really well as well. So if we look at also in the SEO industry, if we look at some of the articles written by amazing people like Mike King or Dan Petrovich, also from Australia, then they rank over years, and you can find them because they're like, they spend hours creating them, and they're getting the payback through the search value there because it's very unique what they wrote.
Because they have something to say.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Exactly. Like, have something to say and you won't have a hard time writing it. It's if you're having trouble writing content, if you're having to spend hours researching the perfect keywords, that content's going to be crap because you don't have anything to say. I mean, a real expert has miles of articles that they want to write, and they never have time to write it because they have too many ideas. If whoever is responsible for content at your company, if they don't have a backlog of 100 articles that they want to write, they don't have a passion for the industry. They're not an expert in that industry. You're paying then a content writer. And if you're paying content writers or SEO copywriters, you will fail. Not that they're not going to every now and then get an article ranking and you're going to get some clicks. But again, that's not the point. If you get that ranking and you disappoint that user because it's the same thing everybody's already said, why are you paying that salary? And I think so many people see SEO as free. Yeah. And it's very much not. It is an extremely expensive channel because real talent, real expertise costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so you're needing to build that up within your company. And if you've invested 3 years of salary into someone who's now really interested and passionate and has the opinion and has that authority, that if you don't keep them happy and interested in writing legitimately good pieces that they want their personal brand to be associated with. If you have a writer and they don't want to put their personal brand on that piece of content, it's because the content's crap and they don't want to be associated with it. And you should not publish that piece of content.
Yeah, no, I agree. It has to be good quality. Otherwise, it makes no sense. I mean, we're way past those cheap articles that you could buy for $10. I mean, that time is gone. Now they're ChatGPT articles. They're better than the $10 ones, but they're still they don't still don't add any value. That's so true.
They don't help the brand. Yeah.
But you bring a lot of value and you talk a lot. And your next speaking is at SMX Advanced. And what are you going to talk about? Because SMX Advanced, obviously being one of the most advanced SEO and search conferences in Europe, is definitely going to be a very interesting show. And you're not going to talk about topical authority. I think you're going to talk about something else. Maybe you can give us a brief, maybe a preview. What are you going to talk about?
It's going to be that kind of my thoughts on what's the next level of topical authority. How does, in an agentic world where it's not a human navigating and browsing, it's a human's autonomous agent run through, whether that's ChatGPT agent mode or Gemini agent mode, when these agents are actually making decisions on authority, what does that look like? And so it's kind of the next step of topical authority.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I mean, it's happening already in a small scale that you can send your agent out to do some research, but I don't see it moving that fast that it's going to do really important decisions yet. But this can change fast, of course, depending on how good they are. I just see them always having no access. It's my biggest problem. I was like, get me that information, get me that information. And they're like, oh, I can't access that information. That's always really sad. But when the MCP, the APIs are ready, then I think it's going to be really amazing. And then your question is the most interesting one. How do they decide?
I think MCPs are going to be a big thing. No? For B2B, 100%. B2B, like if I was a B2B company, I would already be coding, like, no doubt. B2C, I would see the future of MCP being like apps. 100% your loyalists will connect your MCP to their ChatGPT.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of the audience is not going to be your loyalists. And why I, as a general consumer who have no knowledge of the industry yet, say I'm coming in for the first time, you know, I'm moving out of my parents' house, I need to rent my own place, and so I'm going to go and look for rentals. I'm not going to go and install the, you know, whatever domain realestate.com.au is in your country, Immowelt or the plus. I'm not going to go and install their MCP because MCPs, especially right now, have a lot of inherent risk of prompt injection. And it's going to take a long time for us to feel safe and secure with that, because guaranteed they're going to get hacked. Guaranteed there's going to be stories about it. Like, that is in the future, 100%. Yeah. So the same way, like, I'm not going to just download 50 million apps onto my phone. I'm not going to install 50 million MCPs into ChatGPT. And there's no way that OpenAI is going to just indiscriminately use an MCP, because it would be so risky. They have to have the user's permission.
Yeah.
And so I don't think MCPs are coming to save us from the need for a website or the need for indexing. It will be another surface that you need to be mindful of and you need to maintain from a development perspective. It will definitely have a space in the SEO strategy world, but it's very much going to be a space for your loyalists, not for the masses. So you still need more brand. you still need to know how these indexes are going to be processed and how the agents that do just go out and crawl and use either a text-based browser or a visual browser, because those are very different experiences from what you can communicate, because does it have structured data or does it not? There you still need to put in a lot of work and effort. And I think that's where SEO will gradually move towards.
Very interesting point about structured data, maybe just as a short question. Do you think structured data is essential for AI search engines to understand you better than without? Because I always had the feeling that the AI search engines do a really good semantic job of understanding websites, even though there's just text on it and nobody cared for structured data.
For me, structured data is definitely an essential part of any SEO strategy. And I like Jono Alderson's, you know, graph-based, full-fledged approach. That's what I always implement with my clients. I don't see structured data as I'm on this specific individual page and I need to understand the content of the page. That's not what you're putting it on there for. You're using structured data to build a network of entities. It's your way of communicating your brand's graph, not a knowledge graph, just like your interconnectedness to other things. And that's very easy to say, here is my brand entity. That's my organization structured data. It connects my website and my app and my social media profiles. And here's all of my other offsite assets to help you form a really good understanding of this is my brand. My brand is associated to this other organization because I won this award. There is some clout for me, or my brand is associated to this other brand that's a partner of mine, and that strengthens our industry connectivity, or my brand is associated with this product, which is important if you're on selling for a merchant. Say you're a shoe store and you want to be connected to the on brand because they have really cool shoes, then you can do that connection in structured data. So it's less about here is a product page for the on shoe on my website. Here are the details of this on shoe. It knows those details of that on shoe already. It's about forming those, that network of connections. And so that's another way of tying it back into topical authority. This is a way of building up your brand entities' relationships more so than describing a thing.
I love it. Okay. No, that definitely is helpful to definitely encourage people to use schema.org more and structured data, of course. Yeah, so that's going to be a very interesting topic you're going to talk about at SMX Advanced. And then you're already back at SMX Munich as well in March. So I can only recommend everybody who's listening to this, if you want to hear more from Jess, to definitely attend SMX Advanced in Berlin. It's on the 30th of September to the 1st of October this year. And then obviously SMX in Munich is in March 2026. So you should definitely also attend that. I think these both conferences are very amazing, because one thing that is different to many other conferences, I'm not saying all, but many others, it's a lot of knowledge is being shared. There's no pitches. It's just tactics. And so I would say some of the best speakers in the world are there. You're coming from Australia, so it couldn't be further away. You could only do like, maybe New Zealand would be a little bit further. But so you see, like, even the speakers are coming from all over the world to talk at this conference to give you as attendees the best knowledge. And I think Jess has just proven that there's a lot of depth to all these topics. And I think that's what you're going to show at SMX Advance as well.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. So if somebody in the audience wants to reach out to you, what's the best way they can connect with you?
The best way is generally LinkedIn. I'm most active on there. So just under my name, Jess Schultz. I am on most of the other socials as well, but mostly on LinkedIn. Or the other one is, I try to. It's a very irregular newsletter I write called SEO Brief, which you can find through my website. So my website's just jessschultz.com.
Cool. Perfect. Then I'll put that in the show notes as well. And Jess, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I can only say, everybody, meet her at SMX Advance and SMX Munich. Those are the unique times where you can actually meet the speakers and ask them your very specific questions, or reach out on LinkedIn. And thank you for being on the show. And let's talk soon.
Das war's für diese Folge von Marketing Meets Technology. Bis zum nächsten Mal.